Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Good morning, Cleveland, and Cleveland only. Because, C-Town, you and I were the only ones who believed, that what could go down would go down in Pittsburgh last night. A nation of millions were so prepared to bum rush us. Tell us that we were wrong. Tell us that the Browns is the Browns. That we had no chance. We had no chance. That the Browns making the playoffs were a nice little story. But they were about to get their collective faces broken. And then it would all come crashing down. Except we knew better. Didn't we, C-Town? Didn't we? It was you and I against the world. The way it always is. The way it's always been. Because 7 days ago, I came on this very program. I told you how the Browns were in the playoffs. And that the Browns were giving hope to the entire world. And people tried to clown me. And people tried to mock me. People were saying things like, yo, Rome doesn't believe any of that crap. He's just doing a bit. Like any other blowhard who just starts to throw crap up against the wall to see what will stick. He's pushing buttons. He's trying to get a reaction. Besides, who the hell would ever look to the Cleveland Browns for hope? Yeah, I heard all your garbage. And the Browns heard all your garbage. Fact of the matter is, in these troubling and challenging times, that's exactly where you should be looking to get your hope. The Cleveland freaking Browns, because they keep on proving everybody wrong. That's right. All week long, I heard, cool, Rome. The Browns made the playoffs, but they could barely beat Pittsburgh's JV squad in a must-win game. And now they have to face a bigger, better Steelers squad in the playoffs. Yeah, Rome, if you're smart, you'll back off the Browns right now before they get their asses kicked and you get your own comeuppance. Pull your chips back now, Rome. Get out while you're ahead. And these same haters and know-nothings were saying that Cleveland got humiliated by the Steelers in Pittsburgh in the regular season. They said they had lost 17 straight in Pittsburgh. Of course they're going to get hammered. Especially when you find out just one day later that the head coach and the play calling wizard, Kevin Stefanski, and two additional coaches and two players had tested positive for COVID. Now you're missing your brilliant young head coach and key players, and you can't even practice. You can't even get into the facility.
Practice.
And if there was no chance that the Browns could win in Pittsburgh with Stefanski, they sure as hell were not going to win there without him. So the haters were starting to guess just how big that blowout was going to be. Not me. I came on this show 6 days ago and I said, if you think the Cleveland Browns are going to give up, you don't know the Cleveland Browns. What you saw as an obstacle, I saw as an opportunity. Now, let me make this perfectly clear. No Kevin Stefanski, no Joel Bitonio, no Olivier Vernon, no Denzel Ward. No doubt. It didn't matter that the Browns head coach was in his basement and their top two corners were out. It did not matter that their practice facility was closed. It didn't matter that they hadn't practiced together as a team in more than 2 weeks. It didn't matter that Baker Mayfield went days without throwing a pass. Or that their meetings were all done on Zoom. Because the Cleveland Browns aren't just about one man or two men or three men. Man, they're larger than that. The Cleveland Browns are an ideal. And that ideal is awesome and it's inspiring. Because the Cleveland Browns said, bring it on, man. All of it. Throw absolutely everything you have at us. We want it. We want all of it. Build the mountain higher. Build it as high as you want to make it because it's only going to give us a better view from the top. And they made that perfectly clear on the very first play from scrimmage.
Roethlisberger's in the gun. He's got 3-1. Three on the line. High snap. It's over his head. Bouncing to the 10, rolling to the 5. Recovered at the 1. It rolls into the end zone, and Cleveland is recovered. Cleveland has scored a touchdown. Cleveland has scored a touchdown. Oh, what a way to begin.
Westwood won. You see, one team was ready for that game and ready for that moment, and one team wasn't. And the team that was ready was wearing white jerseys, orange helmets, orange pants, and carrying an entire city on his shoulders. And they made that city proud, because jumping out to a 7-0 lead was not enough. They wanted more, and they got it.
Five-man rush, shotgun snap, quick throw up the middle. It's caught, grabbed by Landry, 30, makes a tackle, missed at the 20, goes to the 10, runs to the far sideline. The 5 breaks another tackle at the 2, runs into the end zone, touchdown. A 40-yard catch-and-run touchdown on a pass from Baker Mayfield to Jarvis Landry.
The Browns had run exactly 3 offensive plays. They were already up 14-0. And the Avalanche was just starting. 6 plays later, this happened.
You can see the breath of Mayfield as he bellows the calls. He gets the snap and he hands off to Hunt. Runs over the left guard. Broke a tackle at the 10. Broke another tackle at the 5. Puts his head down. Carries a defender on his back. Touchdown, Cleveland! This is unbelievable! 11-yard touchdown run by Kareem Hunt.
Steelers linebacker Robert Spillane hit Kareem Hunt at the 4-yard line. Kareem Hunt carried him right into the end zone. That summed it up, because the Browns were the better team, the tougher team, the more physically dominant team. Then came another INT. Then 3 more plays before this happened.
From the Pittsburgh 8, shotgun formation, 4 wide. Here's the handoff. It goes on a sweep to the near side to Hunt. Hits the sideline, the 10, broke a tackle, 5. Into the end zone with a cut and a touchdown. Another touchdown by Kareem Hunt. A touchdown run of 8. And the Cleveland Browns have gone up 27-0 with under 2 to play in the first quarter.
Then 28-0. That was a grade A, 100% USDA certified ass kicking. It was garbage time in the first half. It was garbage time in the first quarter. They were making plays all over the place on both sides of the ball. They had backup defensive linemen in that game, and they were making plays. And all you dopes, losers, haters who were coming for Cleveland and coming for me suddenly were pretty damn quiet. All you could hear was the cheering from C-Town. Now, I'm not going to say I told you so, but I actually did tell you. If you were shocked by last night, if you were shocked by the Browns jumping out to a 28-0 lead on the road in the playoffs, you have not been paying attention. It didn't matter where their head coach was or wasn't. It didn't matter that Joel Bentonio wasn't there. It didn't matter that Baker Mayfield just met one of his offensive linemen in the locker room before the game. Did you catch that quote? It was incredible. He was talking to Michelle Tafoya after the game and admitted he had just met one of his offensive linemen.
We had Michael Dunn stepped in at left guard for Joel Bentonio, and then Michael got hurt, and a guy named Blake that I introduced myself to literally in the locker room before the game stepped up in the fourth quarter.
Like, hey, Blake, I'm Baker. You ready to go make some history? Because that's what they did. And that's what the offensive line did. They bullied the Steelers all night. That was a blocking clinic, even without Bentonio. And then Jack Conklin got hurt, and it didn't matter. The line was that good. And don't make this about the Steelers slumping either, all right? They've got a Hall of Fame quarterback. They've got a Hall of Fame coach. They've got Pro Bowlers up and down their roster. They were 11-0 not that long ago. So they're good. They're really good. They're one of the best teams in the NFL. They had a damn good look at the Super Bowl run. They just ran into a buzzsaw. So make sure you give the Browns some bleeping credit. I mean, for real.
Credit.
And do not come in here and tell me that game came down to Mike Tomlin's decision to punt on 4th-and-1. It didn't. But you knew the moment that he didn't go for it, the Browns were going to make them pay, just like the legends always do. Ask Baker.
We're here for a reason. And there's a new standard, and we're going to, you know, try and keep it that way.
Or to put it another way, as he ran towards that locker room.
The man himself, baby.
The Browns is the Browns.
The Browns is the Browns. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, don't make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and it's tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors: old-fashioned, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy. So next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for it in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying that way. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He is Jonathan Jones. Jonathan, good to have you back. What's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim, and I don't think we've talked in 2021, so Happy New Year to you and yours.
You too, bro. Happy New Year to you and yours. Now, if I had told you before last night's game, Jonathan, that the Browns, without their head coach and play caller and multiple assistants, their top two corners and a Pro Bowl offensive lineman were going to jump on the Steelers 28-0, what would you have said?
You are insane. There's no way at all that it's going to happen. You know, I had the Steelers going into this game because they were missing their coach of the year candidate, head coach Kevin Stefanski. But, you know, if they had had Kevin Stefanski going into that game, I was absolutely taking the Browns because of how bad the Steelers looked. Listen, they played 20 quarters of football in December, and they only looked good for two of those quarters, and that was the second half against the Indianapolis Colts, where Ben Roethlisberger and the offense looked like a team that actually was worthy of 11 wins. But Mike Tomlin decided to rest them all for week 17, and that was his decision. Maybe Roethlisberger needed that time off because of his multiple ailments, but it looked very clear that the Pittsburgh Steelers were rusty early on in that game. They finally got into a rhythm, and then, of course, Tomlin, not believing in the right kind of momentum, punting there on fourth and short when the obvious move was to go for it. Just a mess of a game for the Steelers, and it's going to be a very long offseason in Pittsburgh.
Jonathan Jones joining us. I'll double back to that point in 1 minute, but as you tweeted during the game, quote, the copious amount of bleep Baker Mayfield is going to talk after this. Like, what does a win like this mean for him and for the confidence of that Browns team?
Well, it's huge, and I mean, everybody knows what the Cleveland franchise has been through these last several decades. And so, you know, to get that win in Pittsburgh, a place where you were, what, 6-44 or something like that, leading up to that game, against an arch rival in the playoffs, it's obviously huge. However, you know, this is a team, and I said this at the start of the year, they seemed like front runners. If they get a lead on you, they're probably going to win. If you can get ahead of them early, you're probably going to win, more so than the average team. But they've kind of shot that idea into the sun this season. They can play from behind. They can play in front of teams. The only thing is, you know, it's a huge win. But now they have a gigantic test, of course, against the Chiefs. So, you know, the 24-hour rule goes into effect here, where celebrate it, enjoy it, but you absolutely have to turn your attention as quickly as possible back to a team that I believe is going to repeat as Super Bowl champions.
Jonathan Jones is joining us. All right, so finish that thought, if you would. When you've got a couple of powerhouse running backs the way the Browns do, and you've got a physical offensive line the way they do, is it a style of play that can travel to Kansas City and cause some problems?
Yeah, it absolutely is. You have a cold weather team. You know, they're built and equipped. Cleveland is to win in January. We've seen them win in December and January now. So, yeah, it's possible. It's just that I don't know what team in the NFL of the 31 can actually beat the Chiefs. There are teams that can give them games, and we've seen it. There's a fluke where the Raiders can beat them, right? But, you know, the Bills are going to give them problems if they meet in the AFC title game. I think the Browns are going to give them problems if they meet. But the thing that it comes down to, at least for the Chiefs, is they just can't beat themselves. When you look at the first 12 games of the season, the Chiefs only turned the football over 8 times through those 12 games. In Mahomes' final 3 games of this season, since he sat out the last game, they had 7 turnovers, and so including that 3-pick game against Miami. So, you know, they have to take better care of the football, and as we have seen with the Cleveland Browns coming off, especially this win last night, they can be an opportunistic defense, so you cannot turn the football over against them.
We are talking to Jonathan Jones. All right, let me move along then. You know, there's so much, Jonathan, to unpack from that Ravens-Titans game. First of all, what did you make of how Lamar Jackson showed up, and in particular that narrative that he can't win playoff games?
Yeah, I thought the narrative was a little ridiculous. I mean, listen, he struggled in his rookie season in that playoff game, and he got better there as the game wore on. And then in his next playoff game, obviously a loss to the Titans, he accounts for 500 yards of total offense. The team just can't get it done on fourth down. So, you know, it wasn't like he was a bum out there in playoff games. And, all right, the first quarter takes a little bit to get going, but you have a defense in the Baltimore Ravens that can bottle up Derrick Henry the way that they were able to, you know, turn over Ryan Tannehill. And then, of course, Lamar Jackson, I don't really care about passer rating with him. I don't care about yards per attempt or anything like that. He makes the plays that shifts the entire momentum. And listen, we can talk about analytics and we can talk about whether momentum is real or not, but I think everyone watching, everyone at Nissan Stadium, and certainly the guys on either sideline felt when Lamar Jackson broke off that 48-yard touchdown run where he looked like the fastest quarterback that's ever been in the NFL, and how can you catch this guy when he does this, that's backbreaking. And when you have a guy who can do things like that at the right time, and we can go back to the Cleveland Browns game from a few weeks ago when he did that exact same thing and broke their backs, when you have that, that's going to allow you to win football games in the month of January.
Right. I'm not sure I've ever seen a play quite like that from a quarterback. Jonathan Jones joining us. I mean, there was that stretch during the season when the Ravens were not looking at all like themselves, but as you point out, they are rolling right now. So how tough are they? And when they're running like this, how scary a proposition is that for the Bills?
Well, it's really scary. And the fact is, when they went through that sort of midseason lull where Lamar didn't really have his deep ball, and, you know, they didn't face a bunch of tomato cans. You know, they lost to Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh was rolling. You know, they eked out they crushed the Colts, but they lost the Pats and the Titans in overtime and the Steelers again. So, you know, it wasn't like they were just giving up L's to a bunch of teams that we'll never see in the playoffs. I thought that they didn't handle the toughest part of their schedule all that well, but the games they were supposed to win when they needed to, they did. So, yeah, again, the run game is going to travel on the road. And the Bills, of course, feeling very good. It's still just a really difficult matchup. The Ravens are probably the fourth best team in the playoffs right now. You have Kansas City at one, and then whatever sort of argument you want to make for the Packers or Bills at 2 and 3, I'll listen to. And then I think the Ravens are right there at number 4.
Right. So on top of that, then, coming out of the Super Wild Card weekend, was there a team or maybe two that changed your perception at all of them and their chances to win it all?
Well, you know, to win it all, I still think that we're talking about the Packers out of the NFC, and I think that we're talking about the Chiefs out of the AFC. And I'll be surprised if it's not those two teams meeting in Tampa. However, I love the resolve and the grit that I saw from Jared Goff and that L.A. Rams team. That, yeah, okay, the defense stepped up, and Russell Wilson kind of continued his slide there, as we saw in the second half of the season. But what Jared Goff was able to do with that thumb just 12 days removed from surgery, okay, 9 of 19, 155 yards. They're not wow stats, but he took care of the football. He clearly, early on in that game, did not trust where he was going to be able to place the football. But the fact is that he did not turn the ball over. He took care of it. The offensive line, for the most part, kept him clean. And he made solid decisions, really throwing the ball down the field. It wasn't a whole bunch of, hey, we're going to throw behind the line of scrimmage and let our receivers go. I think only a third of his entire yardage came from yak. So I very, very much liked what I saw from Jared Goff, and I think that he proved a lot in that game.
I thought he showed a hell of a lot of grit and a hell of a lot of toughness, and we know they've got a Super Bowl caliber defense already. Jonathan, one last topic before you go. They weren't in the playoffs, but the Texans have managed to generate a lot of headlines over the past week. What's your overall sense of the nature of things in Houston, especially as it relates to Deshaun Watson? I mean, have they blown up that bridge altogether, or is that situation with he and their franchise quarterback salvageable?
I believe right now it still is salvageable. I do not think that the bridge has been totally obliterated, and he will never be back with the Houston Texans. You have, of course, the contract. That would be very difficult to move. Obviously, a number of teams would happily take on that contract and probably give up however many first-round picks that you want. This all stems, of course, from Cal McNair and the weak sort of ownership that he has presented ever since taking over for his late father, letting Jack Easterby kind of take the controls over there. And any number of different issues that we have chronicled throughout the past 2 years with the Houston Texans. So, you know, if you're Cal McNair, first of all, you should have never really told Deshaun Watson, hey, you're going to have input and say in this. But once you do, you have to let him have input and say, or at the very least, don't let him find out as he's vacationing via Twitter of who you have decided to hire as general manager. You definitely need to give him a heads up before that information leaks out, considering all that you have done in the weeks and months leading up to that. So I understand Deshaun having been told something to his face and then the opposite happening, why he is distrustful of the organization on top of everything else that's gone on. But no, I don't think that Deshaun Watson's time in Houston is necessarily up just yet.
He is a senior NFL reporter and an insider for CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. You can also see him on Tops on CBS Sports Network. He is Jonathan Jones. Jonathan, Happy New Year. Great to have you back on. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
But I do have one question for you, Mafia. How y'all living? How the hell are you all living right now? I'm guessing pretty damn well. Look, I know that 27-24 win over the Colts was not as convincing as you would have liked. But if the playoffs are about two things, survive and advance, then you're living really well. Because that's it. That's all that matters. There are no style points. If you blow the Colts out, you don't get to skip around. You don't get a free pass into the Super Bowl. If you win by 30 instead of 3 points, you don't get a bye. I'm here to tell you, I actually think how that went down is going to be good for you. It's a good thing. Probably the best thing, because it reminds you, as dominant as you have been the last several weeks, the playoffs are a different animal altogether, a totally different deal. A game like that's going to dial you in. It's going to make you sharper. You'll be so much better for it. I guarantee they'll be better this coming weekend than they were last. And there was nothing wrong with last weekend. Nothing wrong with hosting and winning your first playoff game in a quarter of a century. So don't get this twisted. There's no need for an apology. There are no regrets. You either win and you move on, or you lose and you go home, and the Bills are moving on. And yes, I know they had been a juggernaut coming into that game. I've been talking about it all week. And when they were dancing during practice, I told Frank Reich he better look the hell out. And Reich did just that, because the Colts came in with a serious plan. They threw a lot of different looks at that Bills offense. They were giving Josh Allen some looks that maybe he had not seen before. In fact, I'd go as far as to say they were stymieing that Bills offense. The crew that was putting up nearly 50 per game in the past three games suddenly looked pretty mortal. But they showed another side on Saturday. They can blow you out and they can win a street fight. And even though things were rolling, or were not rolling early on, Allen still managed to lead an 8-play, 85-yard drive that ended with this.
Second and goal at the Colts 3. Allen, designed run, looking to his right, tries to cut back left. Now he throws a prayer, near right side, tumbling grab, touchdown! The improvisation of Allen as he connects with Dawson Knox, and the first touchdown of the NFL playoffs belongs to the Bills.
Oh my goodness, I thought it was a run.
And that's Westwood One. I mean, I could break down that play until I'm blue in the face, but as always, I'm going to give it to somebody who's much better at that sort of thing than I am. I'm going to turn it over to Deion Dawkins for the ultimate analysis. And the snowman delivered like he always does.
First touchdown to Knox. Like, come on now. The kid is special. You know, he's special. This is a special group. And Josh is almost like a creating a character on Madden with a 99 overall.
Right. And if you thought that he was special and a creative character on that first touchdown, then you were probably blown away by that second touchdown drive, the one just before the end of the first half. Down 10-7, starting with the ball on his own 4-yard line, Allen leads a 10-play, 96-yard drive that ends with this TD.
Allen has never thrown a pick in the red zone. He's going to play fake to Moss, take it himself, and he's in! Standing up as he breaks the plane, brought to a bent left knee, and Josh Allen rumbles in for a touchdown on the ground.
The Colts have totally dominated this first half. They're losing 10-14. That is unbelievable.
That was brass. That was clutch. That was elite. 96 yards in 92 seconds and scoring right before halftime. Man, that is special stuff. Snowman, what do you think?
The kid is, like, he's just out there just having fun. You know, he's just out there just having fun, executing, doing what he does best, and that's leading. He continues to just show it. Like, listen, if Josh Allen does not win the MVP, this thing is rigged. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's doing it day in and day out. He's extending plays. He's making plays with his arms. He's making plays with his eyes. He's making plays with his feet. He's making plays for the offense every single play. And it's just like, man, the kid is special. And he's still young. So it's just like he has a long journey of greatness ahead of him.
Snowman. There is so much in that quote, so much good stuff in that quote. Like the statement, if Josh Allen does not win the MVP, this thing is rigged. I love that. But the biggest thing from that quote, the biggest takeaway that I have from that quote from Dawkins is how much his teammates love Josh Allen. They love this guy. It's not just that he's like this athletic freak. It's not even that he's just a good quarterback. They love the guy. It's special. How about Cole Beasley? Check out a vet, a guy who's seen everything. Like Cole Beasley saying this about his quarterback.
He's the engine that makes this thing run. And we just got to do our best to be as good as him.
Quote, he's the engine that makes this thing run. We just have to do our best to be as good as him. Again, you don't get higher praise than that. That's a vet. That's an experienced guy and a vet saying that we have to do our best to be as good as he is. I mean, that's remarkable. That's leadership. That's charisma. That's it. That's the kind of leadership that wins playoff games and makes Super Bowl runs. And by the way, the guys around Josh Allen did step up. They did match him with their greatness. I mean, sure, the defense may not have played the way that it would have liked. You could focus on that if you want to. But they were going up against a good Colts offense with a strong identity and especially on the ground. But in terms of the Bills, did you see their wideouts? Gabriel Davis, freaky as hell, with his toe taps. Stephon Diggs, with 128 yards, and this.
Allen, play fake, blitzes on. He throws, deep shot down the far right side, end zone touchdown, Stephon Diggs. He led the league in catches and yards, and he comes up with his first postseason touchdown today, and the Bills expand their advantage.
I don't know what T.J. Carey was doing. He watched Stephon Diggs run by him almost like I did.
All right, so like, I'm not saying that the Bills were perfect on Saturday. They weren't. In fact, far from it. But let me say this once again. It's a good thing because they will be better for it. That had all the hallmarks of the kind of game where you look back in a couple of weeks and say, that was the starting point. That win makes it a starting point. A loss would have been the ending point, but they didn't lose. They won. They move on, survive, advance. And now they've got a big test. They're going to host the Ravens on Sunday. And Bills fans, when you think back on that game, don't forget, that's a good Colts team. Unlike some other teams, no names mentioned, the Chicago Bears, the Colts did belong in the playoffs. They could have made a run in the playoffs, and they would have if they didn't run into the Bills. Check these numbers out. Indy puts up 474 yards of total offense and no turnovers. If you had told Frank Reich before that game that he'd have those numbers, I guarantee he would have been pumped and he would have started to plan for the next round. Because before Saturday, every single team that had 450 yards of total offense and no turnovers in the postseason advanced in the postseason. Every team that ever did that had won until the Colts met the Bills. That tells you something about the Bills. And my guy, Deion Dawkins, would tell you that that tells you something about Josh Allen.
If I could put it in one word, he was just lasered in, dialed in, just extremely focused where he was like, nah, we're not walking off this field and with a loss. I seen it, I felt it in Josh's emotions and how he was talking, how he was calling calls, how his aggression was. It's just there. And he went on the field with the kill or be killed mentality.
To me, that's so much of what you need. And so much of what defines a franchise quarterback. Again, the guy's got all the physical ability. We know this. I mean, he got 6'5". He's athletic. He's got crazy arm talent. He can make plays with his legs. But the stuff that Deion Dawkins is talking about, all those intangibles, like he had this kill or be killed mentality. He's laser focused. He's locked in. He's dialed in. There was no way that guy was coming off the field without a win. You know, all those intangibles. That's what makes that guy special. Because a lot of guys have the physical skills. Buffalo. You have yourselves a quarterback, a franchise quarterback, a damn special quarterback. a damn special quarterback, a damn special football team. Hey, you want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back that you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit on how much you can earn. I mean, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you consider all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So, when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report. Limitations do apply. So, before America's team captivated the sports world on Sunday night, it seemed like the country had adopted a player of its own and tried to deem him America's player. And that was just 24 hours earlier, because in a game with the nation watching as Tom Brady started his first run towards the Lombardi, right? That's what that game was supposed to be all about. All right, so now the season can really begin. Now we get to see TB43 make a run at number 7. That's what this is about, right? That's what we all tuned in to see, right? Instead, that's not what we got. I mean, we did get that, and I'll get to that in a minute. But what we really got was Taylor Heinicke, who captivated the eyeballs and hearts of every single person watching. Because Heinicke, the emergency starter for the Washington football team after Alex Smith couldn't go, was straight ridiculous on Saturday night.
Totally ridiculous, Rome.
I mean, this guy was totally ridiculous.
Totally ridiculous, Rome.
Totally ridiculous, America. Bleeping legend on Saturday night. Honestly, I'm still actually having a hard time kind of getting my head around or processing what I saw, because it was that mind-blowing. I mean, did I really see a dude who was studying math at Old Dominion not long ago single-handedly bring a 7-9 football team back and give the Brady or the Bucks and Tom Brady all they could handle collectively? Was I really watching an ODU undergrad battle the GOAT on the national stage in a playoff game? Did I really see that? Did we all really see that? Did Brady himself see that? What was Brady thinking on the other sideline? I think I did, man. I think we all did. And after Heinicke made this stupid, wizardly run late in the third quarter where he escaped a couple of dudes in the backfield and then beat a handful of pissed off Bucks to the pylon for 6, you had to start to believe and even buy the hype.
In the gun, there's the snap, 4-man rush. He has to backpedal. He's hit. He crouches low. He avoids the rush. He runs to the 10 to the near side, line of 5. Diving to the pylon, near side. It is a touchdown. Oh, my goodness. What a run by the Washington quarterback. Touchdown, Washington.
Absolutely incredible. Incredible. And he was at it again later on. I was starting to wonder if this guy could pull this off when he found Steven Sims Jr. with a toe-tapping score to pull Washington within 5 with just under 5 minutes to go in the contest. Could this guy really do this?
He's in the gun. He gets the snap in a 4-man rush. He cocks his right arm. He throws a pass far sideline in the corner. It is caught. It's a touchdown! Steven Sims with an over-the-shoulder catch in the back far corner of the end zone. And Washington is still alive on the 11-yard touchdown pass. A beauty to the heavily covered Sims.
Even Brady was in shock on the sideline. You saw it. You saw the video. Hell, the great Patrick Mahomes was in shock on Twitter, tweeting, quote, "Regardless of the outcome, what a great game by Heinicke." We got Patrick Mahomes tweeting about the guy in game. Now, as we all know, he didn't pull it out, but he'll be pulling a nice fat raise soon enough. Rightfully so. His cat showed that not only can he play in the NFL, he could challenge for a starting job somewhere. Guy was great. It was mind-blowing. Now, credit where credit's due. Johnny bleeping Foxborough. Got to give it to the old man. Because as much as that Washington pass rush was hyped coming in, and understandably so and rightfully so, TB43 shredded them. This dude rode into the end of the season on a hot streak. Rode that right into the district and pretty much did the same thing to a pretty damn good defense, just as he has been doing of late. He torched that secondary for 381 yards. He led the offense to over 500 total yards. And that was Foxborough's fourth straight game of at least 300 yards passing. And during that span, he's got 12 touchdown passes and only one pick. And while it was not easy, and it did take some time, and I think there were certainly question marks even coming into that game, it would appear that Tommy, Bruce Arians, and Byron Leftwich finally have all those talented pieces on offense on the same page. They're gelling, they're meshing, and they seem to have it all together when they have to have it. And that offense, outside of some uncharacteristic drops by Chris Godwin, is humming. And my man Chris, you are one drop away from Mrs. Foxborough lighting into you, my man. Clean it up. I really don't need you doing that either after I hype you up on Twitter the way I did. Something else that happened. But in all honesty, Godwin is not the problem. Far from it. If there is a problem, it's their defense. I mean, sure, they were facing a legend in Heinicke. He's going to make good defenses look really bad, and he did. Think about that defense, though. Do you really know what you're going to get from them week to week? In fact, it seems to me that defense, if anything, might be getting worse week by week. Remember at the beginning of the season, the question was, how long is it going to take this offense to come together and catch up to this badass defense? Remember that defense early on. Remember that defense, which so dominated Aaron Rodgers, who's going to win the MVP. That defense dominated the Packers in Week 6. And now the question itself has been flipped on its head. Tampa, now you have a Super Bowl caliber offense. You have the Super Bowl caliber offense that you thought you would have, but not the defense, at least not as of right now. So you better get right. Because while Drew Brees does not have Heinicke's mobility, he sure as hell does have Alvin Kamara, and he's got Michael Thomas, and he's got some other guys who can make plays. So, Bucks fan, you better hope that your D learn from the phenom that is Taylor Heinicke. And clean it up, man. Clean it up ASAP.
Clean it up.
Clean it up.
Clean it up.
ASAP. He does hold the distinction of being the first in-studio guest on CBS Sports Network and the only man who gets his own custom greeting on this show. He is Yogi Roth. Yogi, the national championship game is tonight. Your new show premieres tonight. I have to ask you, how great is ball, Yogi?
Oh, it's so good, man. And it's a really fun day, right, for college football. We didn't know if we'd get here. For me and this show, I don't know. I knew I'd get here. I just didn't know it would take 15 years to create a show like this, but that's what it took. So to celebrate it and talk to you for a few minutes, man, I'm honored as usual.
It's awesome. Yogi, I'll get to you and talk to you about the show. I'm really curious about how that came to be and your feeling about it coming in. But first, what about the game itself tonight? We have the national championship game. If you were to go back to the semifinal matchup between Ohio State and Clemson, watching Justin Fields, and you've known him for a while, what kind of thoughts did you have watching him in that game?
Well, he's a gamer, man. I mean, I noticed it from jump. I can remember being on Nike's campus at the Elite 11. Him and Trevor Lawrence were the same class, obviously. And what I like to do after, I always like open it up with a speech, and then I go and kind of work in the shadows, and I peer over guys' shoulders. How are they taking notes? Are they dialed in? And you'd be shocked, but, you know, sometimes when you have the top 20 quarterbacks in the country, some are doodling. Some are too cool for school. Justin Fields was as dialed in as any quarterback I've been around in my 13 years doing Elite 11. And I'd say the same for Trevor. But you could just tell from the beginning the type of competitor he was. He was the same way when he competed at the Elite 11, you know, when he became the MVP of it. And to me, performed as well as you could in shorts and a T-shirt. So you knew he bounced back after last year's performance. And I thought he would do it in the way that we saw, especially after he got hurt. I mean, there was no quit in him, right? I know that's like a traditionally, you know, sports phrase, but that's who this young man is. He's got true grit, which is passion and perseverance, right? If you're going to go to Angela Duckworth and the general definition of it, that's what he is. And what I love is that it's rubbed off on his teammates in a year where none of us would have batted an eye if he opted out. None of us would have batted an eye if he said, okay, the season's postponed. But he took a leadership role off the field, on the field, and of course in the semifinal game, as you referenced.
We were talking to Yogi Roth. I'm a big fan of Angela Duckworth and her writings and what she says about grit. And that was a great example of that. He was so, so tough. And I'm anxious to see how he looks tonight. Yogi, what about Alabama? When you look at where Alabama's offense is now versus where Nick Saban's offense was 5 years ago, what jumps out to you the most?
Well, I kind of chuckle because I just think back to when I was coaching at USC. And when we coach, and that was, of course, when Steve Sarkisian was calling plays. You know, him and Lane were the architects of that offense. And we would joke in the staff rooms late at night, like, okay, it's like a video game. Don't screw it up. Like, don't get too cute because you have so much talent everywhere. And that's who this team is on offense. I mean, they're absolutely insane to me. It's probably, I think overall our team at SC was a better team because the defense was so elite with Cushing and all those guys. But offensively, it might be the best offense I've ever been around. You know, it's definitely in that conversation with the Reggie, Matt, you know, that era, Lendale White, of offense. I think those are the top two offenses I've seen in my 20-plus years now in college football. And it's because how they run the ball, it's how they move their tight ends or their receivers in motion. I mean, Sark is not just having Mac Jones play catch. He's playing quarterback. It is based in the West Coast, but it's got all these spread principles. It's got different tempos. Obviously, play action pass. It just stresses you, and he's got answers to everything. And to me, Sark is not only deserving of, you know, obviously the promotion he's getting going to Texas, but being the top assistant coach in the country this year because of the way that he's called the game. It wasn't as though, hey, we've got elite athletes, let's just throw it around all day. Let's be really measured about this and very systematic. And I think for Ohio State, they're going to have to play perfect on offense because I don't see them slowing down what I consider the best offense in the country.
Yogi Roth is joining us. We're talking about the championship game tonight. He's got a brand new TV show, which is dropping as well. We'll talk about that in a minute. Yogi, I was going to say, what about Ohio State? For instance, if you were giving them advice, what is the number one key for them heading into tonight?
Well, I think you just got to be resilient and not try too hard. I mean, that's what I think every coach should say to their team. You know, you're on a huge stage. I remember, you know, being on staffs in those stages or talking to coaches who have, you know, been head coaches in national championship games. And the biggest thing you have to tell your team, and I'm sure they all said it last night, was don't lie in bed imagining yourself making the game-winning play or doing something Herculean. Just play your game, right? So if you're Wyatt Davis, to me, one of the best offensive linemen in the country, he's an interior lineman for Ohio State, just do what you would normally do, you know, when you're going to step on a zone block. You know, if you're their defense and, you know, Alabama completes, you know, a long explosive play. Okay, next snap. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. Don't get over your skis. Don't get overconfident. Don't try to be somebody you're not. Like the coaching phrase that gets thrown around at every level is, quote, don't be a hero. You know, don't be a hero. Don't try to do anything outside of what earned you the opportunity to compete in the biggest stage in college football. And that's going to be hard. Right? It's easy to say, but you dream about making the game-winning play and being Tua and making the game-winning throw or being Trevor Lawrence when he was a freshman, but you can't. And that to me, especially when you're down, at least perceptually, Ohio State not obviously picked to win this game, that's what you have to fight. And I think that's early on in the ball game, just surviving. Like the first, you know, three drives, can you just make sure that, you know, all the excitement that's within the game, like, you know, see what the environment is going to be like. It'll be a little different than anything anybody's played in this year regarding fans, et cetera. Just taking a breath and saying, okay, we're good, and that will be a challenge, but Ohio State's got some veteran leadership there, so I expect them to meet that moment and give Alabama the toughest test they've had all season.
I think so, too. Ohio State, Alabama this evening, Yogi Roth breaking it down. So, Yogi, the new show is All American Stories, and it premieres this evening at 8 p.m. on The CW. In it, you're telling the stories of athletes who have overcome incredible odds to maximize their potential. As you've tweeted, it's something that you would hope would come about for the better part of a decade and a half. How excited are you that it's finally here and the dream now is becoming a reality?
Yeah, I'm really grateful, man, to be honest. Like, I think timing is something that you don't understand in real time, but you understand it, you know, as you get older, as time goes on, and you know that with being a father and a husband and all the things that you do in your personal life. And I feel the same way now. I mean, what I saw last week in this country, I think regardless of whatever line you're on, you'd say, yeah, that was horrific when I'm talking about the nation's capital. And I think that the world needs some inspiration right now, and I think sport provides that dramatically, right? I've always felt like the best quote unquote scripted film is like a football game or a sports game or a story of somebody competing. It doesn't get much better than that. And that's what we have. And I think we have 8 short films that all meet the moment right now in terms of all of us need a little bit of an inspiration. And for me personally, this journey, I've taken this show everywhere. And I've heard things that I'm sure you've heard before, which is, hey, you're not enough big of a celebrity. You don't have a big enough Twitter following or YouTube subscribers. And everybody said no. Up until the CW, and the CW carries a show called All American, which is based on Spencer Paysinger, who, you know, played at Oregon, played in the NFL, and his story is one that's really powerful. You know, he grew up in East L.A. in Crenshaw, and then went to high school in Beverly Hills, and that's what the scripted show is about. And when I sat in front of the CW executives, I gave them the pitch about this show, about telling stories, and they said, I think we have the home for it. Let's call it All American Stories. You go tell 8 of the best stories you can with your production team, go to town on it, and then after they saw the first 2, they said, we need to put it on primetime TV. So it was like the ultimate example of we got in the door, and then we did the work when we got there. And that's been my life as a walk-on, right? It was, give me one rep, coach, and then I make a play. Hey, I earned another one and another one, even as a broadcaster. So it's very comforting in terms of the environment and the competitive nature that was necessary for me to, you know, push this along the lines. But I learned throughout time that it can't just be me on my laptop. Like, I had such a good team, man, when I'm talking about, like, the people that pieced it together, the CW, obviously Spencer, our production team, the head of it, you'd love him. His name's Taylor Cavanaugh. He's a walk-on wide receiver at Oregon State, just like me, who got a scholarship. So our mindset and mentality is very much aligned, and now we get to go tell stories that I think will blow your mind. I think you'll sit back with your kids, wherever you're watching this, and tonight just set it on DVR. I'm not going to try to compete against the national championship. But when you watch it, I think it'll make you a better person. And it'll make you get off the couch and be better at whatever you're doing. And that was the only task that we had from the CW. They said, get people off their couch and offer some inspiration. And if there's anything I've tried to do in my whole life is do that around sport and humanity. And I think this series meets that moment.
Yogi Roth is joining us. I'm proud of you, man. I love that. I love everything you just said. I love everything about the process. And you know this as well as anybody, because as you point out, this is not just about a TV show or even a message. I mean, you've spent your entire life doing this. It's not how many no's that you get. It's how many yeses you get. And all it takes is that one big yes. And you got to keep coming back. You got to keep fighting back. Let me ask you this. As somebody who's always looking to learn and grow, how much of these interviews and this process and this project, how much of it has inspired you on a personal level?
Dramatically, man. So there's a woman tonight you're going to learn about. Her name's Scout Bassett, and she's from San Diego. That's where she resides. But when she was 6 months old, she was burned in a fire and lost her leg. And then her parents dropped her off on the front step of an orphanage in China. And she never saw sunlight. She never saw a book. She never saw a TV show until she was 8 years old, when she was fostered to come to America. Now, mind you, with that being said, when she was in this orphanage, she was abused. Nobody built her a prosthetic. She built it herself out of a leather belt, nuts and bolts, and masking tape. Talk about grit. She came to America at 22 pounds at 8 years old, and then got her first running prosthetic at 14. And in her first race, which she came in dead last in, she said, I felt like the shackles of my life came off me. Now she's the fastest woman in America to ever run in the Paralympic Games in the 100-meter dash. But as I sat across from her, it was the same exact day that I was told that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten season were canceled. And I sat there saying, how am I going to feed my family? Like, what is my future? I remember having those thoughts in between interviews. And when I sat across from her, she looked me straight in the eye, and she said, Yogi, quote, all you got is all you need. And when Scout Bassett told me that, someone who lost her leg in a fire at 6 months old, was dropped off on the front step of an orphanage by her parents, and then went back to China as an adult and forgave everybody for everything they did to her as a kid, I said, okay, I'm going to be just fine. So I had moments like that in every interview where, you know, in this country, some of us may not be that proud of some of the actions that happen in America, but when you hear these stories about these individuals in America through sport, to me, I felt so energized, so proud to be here, to be a part of this country, be a part of the sports fabric of this country. And Scout is just one of, you know, 8 other examples that we were able to hopefully shine a little bit of a light on.
Yogi, all you got is all you need. How good is that? That is great. Yeah. I love that. He is Yogi Roth. He is a Pac-12 football analyst. He is a filmmaker. He's got a brand new show. This has been a passion project that he has been chasing for the better part of 15 years. He is the co-host and the EP of All American Stories. It premieres on the CW tonight at 8 p.m. You've got a national championship game as well. Yogi, congrats on that. I am really anxious to see it. And I know you and I will talk again soon, my brother. Great job.
Thanks, bro. Happy New Year. Stay safe.
Let's go to Arizona. Leon in Arizona. Leon, what's going on? How are you?
All right.
Go ahead, Leon. You're on the air.
Man, I want to talk about Baltimore. I heard those Bill fans.
You do?
You don't like that call.
I don't like that
call. Well, if you want to talk about them, why don't you talk about them? Come on, man. Got caught with your hand in the bag. Literally. Jake in Buffalo. Good to have you, Jake. How are you?
Jim, give me Baltimore. The Buffalo Bills managed to get outplayed on Saturday and still win a football game because that's what good teams do. And honestly, Jim, I thought that Brian Daboll's game plan was a little vanilla. Like, that game plan was so boring. James Kelly's wardrobe thought that maybe the Bills could spice things up a little bit. And on the topic of big head threads, I know that Costco has become a topic on the program, but that doesn't mean that James Kelly should buy his shirts off a metal table in the middle of a warehouse. Like, JK, I never thought that I'd point someone to Hawk for fashion advice, but maybe mix in a pattern or two, dog. You're a pocket protector away from auditing my taxes. I mean, Jim, I'm no Radio Shack employee, but I'm pretty sure I heard Josh Allen audible to James Kelly on Saturday, and the team ran Spider 2 wide Banana Republic. But, Jim, when it comes to this era of Bills football, with our annual playoff appearances, dominant regular season, and now a playoff win, it's really time for the haters to just shut the hell up. Before you took your vacation, I heard Jeff in SoCal take a run at my boys. Jeff, dude, you're a Dolphins fan from Southern California. How exactly does that happen? Like, did you look at a map and figure out how to root for a city that's the trashy, geriatric version of the one you live in? Like, man, I like palm trees and sunshine, but any fan base I'm a part of has to be all about Ed Hardy and methamphetamine. Jeff, keep the Bills' name out your mouth, because this franchise doesn't have time for dopes like you. Stick to what you know, like regrettable takes about women's sports and getting your sorry ass rung up. Anyway, Jim, I know you don't root, brother, but how about you give Buffalo some of that jungle karma, because the mafia freaking deserves this. War a Bills-Browns AFC championship game in Orchard Park, New York. I'm out.
Rack him. Nice job, Jake. Why don't we go in market and be on topic? Speaking of Akron, Joe in Akron. What's going on, Joe? Good to have you on. How are you?
Romy, my Michael Fox-trotting homie. What's happening, partner?
What's Thanks up, partner? Bond.
Listen, just so you and the clones know, here in Ohio, non-essential businesses have to close at 10 p.m. That means if we wanted to watch the end of the game, we had to go home and watch it away from fans. So please forgive us if we don't know how to act right now. Geographically, Pittsburgh is closer to Cleveland than Cincinnati, Buffalo, and even Detroit. And we've lost a whole generation of fans to the Steelers because for 31 years, that's right, 1989, look it up, clones, the Steelers have finished ahead of us in the standings every single year. And we are finally a better team than them. Yeah, you were, you mentioned the local news. They only read three tweets, yours, LeBron, and some kid we got in the Lindor Carrasco trade. So thank you so much for all the karma and having our backs. War, the Ohio State Buckeyes keeping the party going tonight. War, the return of the Mike and Indy. War, Jason Whitlock on the pod. And war, America's team shocking the world again next Sunday, defeating the champs.
Joe Akron, Mercedes Lewis is my guest. Mercedes, great to have you back. Listen, before we talk football and the upcoming game against the Rams, how are you doing? How is life going for you right now?
How you doing, boss? Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. Staying out the way, navigating through the tight spots, not going outside unless I have to. but everything is good. I'm healthy. My family's well, so. You know, you can't ask for more than that.
My man, what a great response. I appreciate that so much. That is a great response. Now, you're coming out that bye week over the weekend. I'm curious, how valuable is it to get that kind of rest at this point of the year, and how did you approach your time off?
Well, I think, you know, for us it was important because our original bye, the first bye that we had was like after week four. You know, after week four, you don't really need it. You know, normally it's better to have it, you know, after you play 8 to 9 games. But unfortunately, it was after week 4. And so, you know, it came at a really good time. Get some guys healthy, get some guys back. You know, going into the playoffs, that's big. You know, being able to play your way and earn that bye in advance in the playoffs. So, you know, we're looking forward to the opportunity, and we're looking forward to doing it with good health.
Mercedes Lewis is joining us. You know, I talked to Aaron Rodgers a few weeks back, and there's been so much made about how mindful he is right now. Last month, I thought you had a great tweet. You wrote, "Live consciously each day. Have to avoid sleepwalking through life. Your life is something to be experienced, not coasted through." I mean, it seems kind of self-evident, but what did you mean by that? And then how do you take that approach as you move through the postseason? And what types of things are you thinking about right now?
Well, I think it's easy to get lost in the monotony of, you know, playing in the NFL. Every day is structured. You're doing the same stuff every day. And you're always trying to look for ways to get away from it, right, and try to break that monotony a little bit. And I think, you know, for me, I do a lot of self-reflecting. And it's important to, you know, just understand that this is a privilege, you know, to be in our position doing what we're, you know, what we're here to do. And to not take it for granted. You know, I came from a losing organization in Jacksonville. We didn't win much. And so it's easy to take winning for granted, right? And so I think part of my job is being the leader and, you know, not only playing well, but at the same time is just rubbing off on the young guys in a way that they understand that, hey, man, this is not, you know, this is not a given. And it's so hard to win games in this league. And, you know, as you know, the margin for error is very small in the NFL. So always be mindful. Have gratitude. With me, you know, every day when I wake up, I kind of, you know, think about, you know, the energy that I want to put into the universe before I walk out of my house, you know. So definitely blessed to be in this position and, you know, not taking anything for granted.
That is gold to me, that when you wake up in the morning, you think about what kind of energy you want to put out into the universe. So let me turn that thing on its head. What kind of energy do you want to put out into the universe, and how do you approach it?
Always living like you're on a one-day contract, meaning that if I'm not giving, you know, my personal best or whatever it is that I'm doing in that day, I can't renew my contract for the next day. So every day is about making sure that, you know, your world is in order, you're treating people with respect, and whatever that, you know, you're putting out there, you expect to, you know, expect them to get it back. So just positive energy, man.
Mercedes Lewis is joining us. I love that, too. Now, you mentioned you want to have this kind of impact on some of the younger players. I'll give you an example. Aaron Jones said this of you, quote, "He brings that dog mentality, the nastiness, something you need. He's a true leader and a true veteran. When we run out on the field for warmups, we're all in the huddle, and it's either him or A-Rod talking. And when Big Dog speaks, everybody listens." I'm kind of curious about that dog mentality. Like, does that come from where you're from and how you came up, or can you cultivate that? Can you learn to have a dog mentality?
I think that, you know, in some way, shape, or form, you can learn it, but it takes really good leadership to kind of rub off in that way. Obviously, I was born on the east side of Long Beach, and, you know, I had to take the stairs to get where I'm at right now. And you know, obviously playing 12 years in Jacksonville, that built a lot of gristle on my bones. A lot of the games that we were playing in Jacksonville we weren't playing for championships or playing to get into the playoffs. So it's really just your pride and your brand of football, you know, your legacy, what you want to be known as. I can guarantee you that regardless of whether we were winning games or not in Jacksonville, when you turned on the film, you knew what 89 was going to be, what I was going to be doing, and what type of energy I was going to be putting into my job and how much it meant to me. So I think that's what, you know, Aaron Jones is talking about. And, you know, obviously that's just who I am naturally. And it's a blessing that, you know, the other guys can feel that way.
You know, I know exactly where you're from, and I know exactly what high school you went to, because I've mentioned probably to you in the past, Mercedes, I married a gal who went to Long Beach Poly. My wife, Janet, is the best person I've ever known. I married her, and she's got that Long Beach grit, yeah. Man. She's tough. She's proud, and so is her family. But they're sweet, really, really sweet. Now, a lot of your work ethic also comes from back in the day. Your grandmother, Florence, used to say, "Keep working because life is fair if you keep working." So what kind of an impact did she have on you, and how much of that belief has become part of who you are?
Well, really, you know, it was just about, you know, growing up. My mom had me, she was 15 years old. We bounced around a lot, and, you know, for a long time, we were living with my granny for at least 2 years. And, you know, the thing that I took, you know, from my grandma the most was just, you know, keep working, life is fair. Nobody cares about your excuses. Nobody cares if you're sick, if you're hurt. You have to push your own weight and, you know, provide your own opportunities and make sure that, you know, you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing to give yourself a chance. And, you know, I've never been a victim blamer. I've always been ahead of the curve and always, you know, I put more pressure on myself to do well. So, and that always worked for me.
Mercedes Lewis joining me for a few more moments. You know, Aaron Rodgers also, it's not just the young guys, but Aaron himself talks about how much he respects and appreciates you. Let me ask you this. When you look at him, how much of yourself do you see in him in terms of work ethic, desire to be great, focus, and so on?
Excuse me. I think that, you know, you hit it right on the nose. I think that Aaron and I are, that's why we've become so close. And it was more so the things that aren't said, right? I think it was more so the respect of how we approach the game and how we work. We're both not rah-rah guys. We like to lead by example. So just that in itself kind of put us on the track to where we are now. And then, you know, being in that huddle, we know what we expect from each other. We know what we expect from our teammates. And we make sure that we're bringing it not just in the film room and on the practice field, but on game day. So, you know, he makes it easy. You know, he's a gold in my eyes. I'm proud of him and the way he's able to perform, regardless of the scrutiny, regardless of what the circumstances may be, drafting a rookie quarterback in the first round, all of that. It hasn't mattered because he owns his process. And I think that's what it really comes down to.
Let's see. You've got the Rams and Packers on Saturday. It's a short week in that regard, even though you're coming off the bye. It's early in the week, but I know you're thinking about this, and I know you've got your own process. What kind of thoughts do you have about the Rams when you look at them on film, and what's the biggest focus for the week for you?
I mean, I just feel like the Rams coming in, their defense, dynamic. Dynamic defense. They play together. They play fast. They're physical, technically sound, and that's how we are on offense. So it's going to be a battle, and we're looking forward to it. You know, I put my money on us. You know, we faced good defenses so far this year, and we've been able to do our thing. And this is going to be another opportunity to go out there and display our brand.
I know you're always going to bet on you. He's a tight end for the Green Bay Packers. He is a Pro Bowler. I ran down all those numbers. Co-host of Uninterrupted's The Threat as well. Rams at Packers on Saturday. Mercedes Lewis, my guest. Mercedes, I appreciate you making time for me and for the show and for our listeners. Really good to have you back. Have a great week and good luck this weekend.
I appreciate that, boss. Thank you.
Good night now!